Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
We're so thankful for the memory. The joy of Christmas Day makes us blessed in every way. As we gather with our loved ones, it's a perfect time to pray that the spirit of Geneva brings a peace that's here to stay. And we thank them. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Well, it's not Christmas or New Year's right now, but welcome to Behind the Curtain Podcast. This is WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick with you today. And that, of course, the voice of the great Bob Hope, his theme song, Thanks for the Memories. But that special Christmas edition, because I wanted to kind of trigger in your mind one of the things Bob Hope is so legendary for doing, and that's his entertaining of the troops. A new book talks about the letters that went back and forth between the troops and Bob Hope. It's called Dear Bob, Bob Hope's Wartime Correspondence with the GIs of World War II. And joining me is one of the co-authors of the book, Martha Bolton, but not just a co-author of this book. She herself was the first woman staff writer for Bob Hope. She wrote his television shows, his personal appearances, his military shows. She's Emmy nominated. And Martha, I used to think I was pretty something good when I could tell people I wrote 15 books. You've written 88 of them, and I have no idea how you've done it. Congratulations, and thanks for being with me.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be on and talking about Bob Hope and just what a amazing life he led, and anxious to get into it.
Yeah. So, of course, the co-author with you is Linda Hope, Bob's eldest daughter. She's going to join me in a few weeks from now. We're going to talk about life with Dad. But your work with him, again, this was not as though this was a research project for you because you didn't know the man. You worked with him forever. So can you just start off and tell us a little bit? You know, we all know Bob Hope from the movies, from television. I had the pleasure of meeting him once. But what was Bob Hope like?
Well, in 15 years, I was with him 15 years, and in that amount of time, he never said one unkind word to me. He was such a nice man, and when he was the same person backstage as he was when he walked onto stage, and then when he got done, he walked off, and he was the same person. I can't say enough good about the man. He loved what he did, and he was certainly had an amazing career. Even when he was entertaining the troops, he had this fabulous career going on that he didn't have to. He didn't do it for fame. He didn't have to do it. He did it because that was part of his heart. And he was such a generous person. Whatever came his way, he would give it right back. He would just. He supported so many good causes, and people would ask him to do this or that, for this cause, and he was there. It just didn't, if it was a good cause, he supported it, and he was a giver.
And of course, it was such a different time. Bob lived to be 100 years old, so that says so much right there. Right. But the focus for this book, there's been a lot of books about Bob Hope. Bob has written some books. I'm proud to have some autographed copies in my collection. And so there's so much to his world. But this is a new book, and I know if Linda was with us now, she might be able to maybe partly kick off this story, because am I right that the impetus for this book are all of these letters that went back and forth between the troops and Bob, but they're all in these orange binders in an office, and that's part of what triggered this interest.
And she grew up with the letters, so she, was always curious about them, ended up doing a high school report on the letters. I came across them when we were working on a project, and I got to read some of them, and I was just so amazed at the closeness of the GIs and Bob. You always knew that he respected the veterans whenever they would come to the television tapings or he'd run into one publicly. He just the love was there. You saw the mutual respect between the GI and Bob, and Bob and the GI. But in these letters, it goes to a whole different level. They would write him It wasn't Dear Mr. Hope. It was, hey, buddy, how you doing? Hey, pal.
Yeah.
He was a member of their family. He was their best friend. And they would tell him things that they wouldn't tell their family. They would just share their heart with him. And then they would also, share laughs with him. They would go back and forth playing pranks on each other. So many emotions are through these letters. It takes you on this roller coaster of laughter, of tears, of amazing historical significance. So many of these letters are, and it's an amazing treasure trove to the country of this relationship that we all watched, but it was so much deeper than we ever imagined, and just an amazing treasure. And thankfully, his secretary, Marjorie Hughes, at the time, saved them. Not only the letters that the GIs sent in, but also on onion skin, carbon paper, the Bob's responses. So it's a real treasure, and we're happy to let other people read it.
Yeah, I'll include an appendix of carbon copy. Copy so that the young people listening to us can learn what some of these things are from back in the day. But, listen, for those who hope the book is filled with letters and pictures, and it is, but there's also a narrative that you and Linda kind of put through this that kind of bridges it. And one of the things I think that reminds me, because, I mean, I was young, well, the World War II part I was not alive for, but I was certainly around for his Vietnam trips and all of that, and as a young boy. And I could, it was all about watching him perform and the magic with the troops, as you talk about, Martha. But at the same time, you make the point in the book that he would look out at the troops, and he knew that some of the faces that he was seeing at that particular Christmas show or whatever show it was, they were going to be, they could be dead just a few days later. He had that situation, and how tough that had to be for him. And some of the GIs who would go up to him and say, "Here's my mom's number. When you get home, would you please call her? Tell her you saw me."
Right. And he would do it. He would do it after this amazing tour that took him to the far reaches of the world, and you knew he was exhausted. He'd fly home and he'd get on the phone and make all these calls. And, these are things that he just did between him and the GIs. That, it didn't make the news. It was just him fulfilling his promises to the GIs, and he did it. And he did know that in the audience, there was a very real chance, because he got letter after letter after letter from family members, moms that would say, "My son saw you at such and such show, and I just thought, since you saw him since the last time I saw him, I thought I should tell you that he was killed in action." And it's just letter after letter. So he knew it was very real, the possibility that these kids wouldn't see another show. In fact, there was one show he did, and they were going to invade Peleliu the next, it was coming up, that was the next battle, and something, approximately 60% of the audience that was there at his show were killed in the battle.
There was a story, I've read the whole book, and this is in my mind, was I believe it was a letter he received from a mom of a GI whose son was killed, but she said because he was a merchant marine, she was never given a flag. There was no commemoration of him in his service, and the memory she had was the Bob Hope connection.
Right, and he would see to it. If they let him know certain things like that were happening, he would take it as far as he could possibly take it. He'd try it himself, and then he'd take it to Congress, and then he'd take it to the president. He was their champion, and the GIs said over and over in the letters that he was the number one person who had their back, and he just fulfilled it, not only in wartime, but in peacetime. It didn't stop during the peace times. He just continued, performing at VA hospitals and giving them whatever equipment they needed and donating it. And he just, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, President Roosevelt told him, because Bob wanted to enlist, and President Roosevelt told him that his talents would be better served entertaining the troops. And Bob, you know, signed up for World War II, but he continued it. Roosevelt didn't know what he was getting when he got Bob Hope, because not only was it that war, but it was Korea and Vietnam and the Persian Gulf Wars and the Cold War. And he just all along for 50 years. Amazing. And he would have kept on going. His last military show, he was 87 years old, and he's crawling in and out of helicopters. He's going as close to the front line at 87 years old, when other people would be happily retired and just enjoying life. And that was, to him, that was how he enjoyed life, was being there for the troops.
Yeah, you know, you can, when you look back, and again, maybe we're of a generation that knows these names. I imagine if you went to really young people today, they might not know his name, which is why we have to keep the name alive and let them know what entertainers right. really were like in that time. But I mean, you know, Bob Hope, Lucille Ball, and of course, they were good friends. And there's just a group of mm-hmm. people who just need to live on forever. I was curious, you mentioned the other wars that he would entertain at, and you were right. So I did sort of wonder from the get-go, why this book is only focused on World War II. Is there a volume two yet to come, or were these the full records that you could find?
No, we did this first because the anniversary was coming up for World War II. In fact, the book was going to come out last year, but because of COVID and different things, a lot of the celebrations got canceled or restructured, and it ended up coming out in March. And we were, we were excited about that, but even more so, you know, how we all, you know, we survived 2020 and came through with new feelings and understanding of how we all need connection and we're all looking for hope. So I think really coming out in March is the perfect time. And Bob Hope has always been known for his timing. And I think he did it again, because we're all ready for a book like this. And the letters are just so full of hope. They're so full of gratitude and the importance of connection, because he sure connected with the GIs, and they did with him as well.
Well, it is so true. And as you read the letters, and I really hope everybody not only gets the book, but takes the time to read these letters, because, you know, if somebody were to just write a fan letter today, it might be, you know, "Dear Mr. Hope, I so admire your movies." You know, I mean, there's a way we write a fan letter right. and things we might want to say. And you said this before, Martha, but that's not what these letters are. I swear these letters are from somebody who was writing their best friend at home or something. Right. And it's sort of a, "Can you do this for me? And I wanted you to know this. And here's a picture of you, by the way. Here's some soldier who looks like you." There's a lot of this whole chapter in the book about the artwork. "Here's somebody that we think looks like you." I mean, they were truly interacting with their best friend, and that could only happen yes. because he responded.
Absolutely. And they just knew. And if one soldier got a letter, the whole company, it went around everybody. Everybody was encouraged. They passed it around, and it as soon as it was delivered to that soldier, from the mailbag, they all followed him back to his bunk and wanted to gather around to hear what he had said. He just brought such an excitement with the power of his words and the power of the fact that he, this big celebrity, was taking the time to write to them. And again, he was their best friend. It was their buddy. And to all the troops, they just loved
him. And I know one of the things you write about that he did was that in the letters, it wasn't like even just a form letter that sent back. He made references to things in that location. I mean, they knew he knew who he was writing to and where they were, because he made sure that was in there. So I'm just sort of curious, since Marjorie was his, you know, secretary at the time, and maybe this is an unfair question, or maybe you don't know, but I mean, were these all dictated by Bob? These were his words, or maybe did he have, you know, his secretary who kind of knew what he would say, knew what he would do, and helped along? Or were these truly the labor of love from him every letter, every time?
I mean, they sound like Bob, and I would assume that they were dictated from him himself. He was very hands on his correspondence, so. He did, at the height of the war, he got 38,000 fan letters a week. So he did as much as he could and answered as many as he could, although you know, it's probably physically impossible to answer all of them, but he did as many as he could. And every time he'd come home, he'd spend time answering the GI mail, and he would say it. He said, I, you know, popped in to catch up on my GI mail. And he was very hands-on, and he knew in talking with him when I first talked to him about putting these into a book when he was alive. We started working on this years ago, and he knew what was in those letters, so he read them and he answered them.
Well, and you might have maybe some people listening to say, oh, come on, how did everybody know his home address? You didn't have to know his home address. You wrote in the book, people could just write Bob Hope Hollywood, and he got it.
Yeah, there's this one letter, the envelope is Bob, and then in quotes, location doubtful, but probably somewhere near Hollywood, California, Hope. And that was all. That's all that it was like he was Santa Claus. If you wrote down Bob Hope, it just found its, the letter found its way to him. Pretty amazing.
That really is. And the other thing that we learned through the book, and again, I had never thought about this because all I ever did was see the footage of him performing. The danger. He was often in, I mean, you're right, there was a time, there was a water landing, and he was flying the plane, that's a whole other thing, but where an engine went out, and they had to, and the pilot ran back up and took the wheel or whatever, and had to, you know, and land on the, on the water. I mean, the point is, he was in dangerous territory. It wasn't like they were able to set up some safe place, either in World War II, or let's Vietnam for that matter. He was always in danger.
Oh, yeah. And there's letters from the GIs that talk about different shows. And remember that when we all had to take cover from the bombing, and remember this time and remember that time. And he definitely put his life on the line. And what I found really interesting, too, is, you know, for an actor who played so many cowardly roles where the role was a coward. He is one of the bravest people because he would hear about troops on, you know, a nearby island, you know, that wanted a show or someplace in a hard to get area. And he, the pilot would say, well, it's, you know, a little too dangerous or the weather's not good or whatnot. And Bob would be the one that would override the pilot and say, no, we could do it. We could do it. We get over there and we'll get back by this time. And he was fearless. And sometimes, you know, it was a pretty dangerous situation and they ran into troubles and barely made it back and, come limping back. But he would do it for the troops. He didn't. He was not one that said, well, you know, we better not do that. And if the troops were expecting him, he moved heaven and earth to get there.
And I know he always brought other Hollywood stars with him. And of course, the troops at the time, so many of them wanted to see beautiful starlets and women, you know, up on the stage. And he was always aimed to please. He always seemed to know that while people loved him, he was kind of dad, but he always had to bring along the pretty women or whatever, because that's what the troops were going to just yell at and whistle at and really, really love.
Yeah. And he knew their complaints. He knew what they wanted. He just could read them. And plus, a lot of that came from these letters, too. They would write and say, well, why don't you bring this one, or why don't you bring this one? Or, I saw your show and you didn't bring this one, and we'll talk about the wisdom of that in the next letter. But, their disappointment if he didn't bring somebody. But he knew where to tap in. He knew what represented home to them. And he had a connection. He knew their heart and he was their pal. It's like just buddies, how buddies have that connection and know what each other are thinking. He just had that connection with them.
And I don't know that this got a lot of publicity, but you write about it in the book, of course, where the fact that he also visited troops in military hospitals. And in one instance, you wrote about the fact that there were soldiers who wanted no, I'm sure they were depressed and down. They wanted no visitors, but they would see him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Talk about that the power of the connection with the wounded.
Well, there were some that would write and say, when, I heard you coming, that you were coming and they had had a bad time. They had just, there's this one where he had just been given word that he had the option of either keeping what legs he had or having them amputated. And then and these are the kinds of situations they were dealing with. And then Bob would walk in, and he represented not only home, he represented this celebrity coming to, you know, but he wasn't really a celebrity when he walked in those rooms. He was, again, he was family. He was someone that represented home to them, and they saw him, and it would just turn their, you know, just the daily routine of trying to survive. It gave them enough courage to keep on going, or to make that hard decision on which way to go, or just hearing his voice coming down and the way he would treat them as not any kind of pity at all. It was always just, you know, well, I bet you're glad you didn't have to come down and see the show today, you know, and it just conversation and joking around with them, getting, you know, sitting next to them on the bed and playing a game of chess with them. There's one picture of him. He got up on top of an upright piano and he entertained all of these patients, and they're in their bunks. And then it's just amazing what he would bring to the room when he walked in, and just being himself and being their buddy. Their best friend, just giving them hope to hang on for the next day.
This is a question you probably can't answer, and it shows you I've read the whole book, but I just have this theory. In 1944, he gets a letter, a series of correspondence between him and a guy named Bob Wallace. And in fact, Bob would say, hey, write back soon and all of that. And I knew Bob, and of course, Bing Crosby, close friends, and Bob Wallace, of course, the Bing Crosby character name in White Christmas in 1954. Is it just a weird thing in my head that I'm making a connection between those things? Do you know anything that might prove that to be true?
Well, you know, there's things that happen. You'd see a familiar name in the letters, and you're just reading along, and then all of a sudden this person who became a major star or was in show business or whatever, and those were usually that person, and then you know, you just, some you didn't know, some you don't know whether it is or not, but
one of the writers was Sherwood Schwartz, who of course went on to do Gilligan's Island, so I certainly got that, you right. know, those connections. But Bob Wallace was really a fictional name, right? It was a character name of Bing Crosby, and yet it was the name of this person who kept writing Bob Hope back in the 40s. I don't know, in my mind I thought maybe there's something magical there.
It could have been, but we don't know for sure. But it could have been. They did funny things like that too, where there's a few in there that have a familiar name of people that I worked with and had been with him back in radio, and I'm not sure if that's the person or like you say, you know, there's the fictional names that somebody could have been.
I had to at least ask, because it was in my head. I kept reading it and going, oh, and I'm going to ask Martha. And of course, some people would say, why did Bob Hope never become president? Let's put that to rest, because he couldn't.
Right, because he was born in England and came over when he was four. He said he came over when he found out there was very little chance of him becoming king, so he came to America. But I believe personally that if he could have entered the race, I think he very well might have won.
You wrote that in the book, and I don't disagree. Yeah. Listen, Ronald Reagan became president, right? It's not like you can't go from entertainment to the top. We won't even talk about Donald Trump, but that can happen. You wrote not only for Bob Hope. I know you wrote for, I think, Phyllis Diller and so many others. So just a question for you: when you would do your writing, you had to find Bob's voice, right? You couldn't write for Bob as you did for yourself or Phyllis Diller or somebody else, right?
Right, right. You get his voice in your head, and whoever you're writing for, if it's Phyllis, you get their voice in your head, and not only do the lines have to be funny, but they have to be funny in their voice. And if it's not, then they're going to read it and they're going to say, well, that's a good joke, but it's not me. And so yet you have to capture that voice, and it takes a little while of doing it. And then you really catch on to what his voice is, and you know if it sounds like him or if it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then you save it for somebody else, or tweak it for somebody else, or you rewrite it so that it does sound like Bob. But yeah, that's one of the most important things, is capturing the voice.
Well, Martha Bolton, the book again is Dear Bob, Bob Hope's Wartime Correspondence with the GIs of World War II, brand new book, filled with pictures and letters and commentary that takes us along for the ride. And again, for those who remember Bob Hope, as I do so well, and so many others, it's a must read. But for those maybe who are too young to have those memories, and you're a fan of some current star of today, you know what? Read this book, because learn what it really meant to be a Hollywood celebrity, and a Hollywood celebrity who cared about the people who were serving this country in uniform. The message is just so powerful, and the message comes through the letters. And Martha, there's so much more I know, and you've written other things, whatever, but what a great project this was. I'm so glad you and Linda took the time to do this. It's a real, real treat for all of us to get to read it.
Well, it was an honor to put it together and write the narrative, and just, we're so happy that it's out there and people are getting to enjoy it.
Well, I'm going to promote it when I put out the put it up on for people to hear this podcast. They'll be able to get a connection to the book. Martha Bolton, I thank you so much for your time. You're wonderful to talk to. One day when COVID's over, let's just have a drink. So many stories to share.
Well, I'm sure you sound like you are an absolute fan of Bob's, and you have a collection that would be very fascinating to hear about in souvenirs and whatnot. So,
you got it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you, Martha, for the work you've done. Thanks for a great book. It's called Dear Bob. Thank you, Martha Bolton.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.